Good morning.
Good morning.
It is once again good to be with you in the house of the Lord. Oh, how I love thy law. It is my meditation all the day. Thou, through thy commandments, hast made me wiser than mine enemies. That was very timely and appreciated reading this morning. We've been looking at the introduction to the Proverbs, and we've gone through about two-thirds of the first chapter. I hope it doesn't dissuade you from this study to find out that the first nine chapters are introduction. But that's with good reason. Because the Proverbs are just under 1,000 different individual lines that they used to use in the old world to encompass and encapsulate and put in a tiny box for you a concept that you can use functionally in your day-to-day life. Usually they use some form of allegory or comparative to make it easy to swallow and easy to understand, using basic things that all men use and know and study. So now we looked into the most important aspect of wisdom, the fear of the Lord, and then the next portion, which was to honor your father and mother, and how vital this was in the growth of wisdom in your life, that there would be no wisdom to be had. Then there was the warning on friends and peer groups and the dangers that they possess, and how it might seem very opportune at the time, but we must remember the wisdom that God has given us. For, as it says later in the Proverbs, all men do right in their own eyes, but the end thereof are the ways of death. But next we hear a voice, a very particular voice. I'm going to read to you Proverbs 1 from verse 20 to the end. It says, "Wisdom crieth without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she uttereth her words, saying, How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. Because I have called, and ye refused. I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind. When distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me. But I will not answer, for they shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they hated knowledge, and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil." Now, there's quite a bit in there. Now, this lady, Wisdom, is frightful. As we're going to see later on, we'll revisit her one more time in this study. But she reveals to us that she was built into the foundations of the world, that she was with God before there was a creation. And so, when you start out, you see wisdom crieth without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. You kind of can almost hear a whispering, just as God speaks in that still, small voice. She crieth in the chief place of concourse. The chief place of concourse. And do we have anything like that today? Well, it's not like it was then, but it's exactly like it was then. We all gather together in different places. We just have more venues and platforms for that now than we ever had before. But there are places where you can go to be amidst many people, whether it be for entertainment or for business. Right? We all go to the supermarket for the world, and many of us go into the Facebooks of the world, right? We can't escape wisdom, because wisdom is built into existence. She wasn't built into just the gates of the old world or into the streets as they were laid out in the old world. As a matter of fact, I would submit before you that the only growth that we have as a society came from wisdom, and so she's more around us than ever before. We have more streets than we used to have. If you were to look at the layouts and the way that we're able to travel at such high speeds, with such a low rate, all things considered, of collision and danger, to the point where we all trust it to travel farther distances. Some of us, church today, we trust it with all of our thought. We have the rail lines and a great many other things, and the great boats that go through all their different things. Then we have the internet around us now, where we can communicate at high speeds, and all this interconnection that happens has to happen by necessity on the foundation of wisdom. And so whatever place of concourse you are, she is there. She is there to warn the simple. And you think of places like Facebook and you say, well, there's much more simplicity going on there. It's maybe more given to simple. You think of all the different YouTube videos of cats that are out there. And you might just think, boy, that's exactly the place that the simple might go. And that's why that's exactly the place where wisdom must cry out. Where everywhere we go, wisdom cries out with this particular warning. And who's she crying to here? Well, first off, she cries out in the openings of the gates, and in the city, she uttereth her word. So, in the gates in the old times, that was where everybody had to go if they were going to or fro the city. That's why John the Baptist stood in the gates of the city, and he knew he would catch Herod coming in, and he would be able to say, it's not right for you to have your brother's wife, because that was a place he had to come through, and he had to hear, right? So John the Baptist knew that was the right place to go, and likewise, wisdom stands in that same place, crying out. The places where we all go to and fro, she stands crying out in the city. And she says, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity, and the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge? Now it says later in the Proverbs that a rightly spoken word enters deeper into a wise man than a thousand stripes into a fool. If you think about that for a second, that's very, very harsh, and you wouldn't want to be the fool. And yet, the fool is the one who wisdom is out there doing her proselytizing for. Right? And you can kind of see a bit of a semblance of what Jesus tells us to do. Go ye into all the world. Right? Make disciples of every nation. Speak the gospel. Speak your testimony. Right? Because it's the sinners who need that particular speaking, and who need to hear that gospel, and who need to hear that testimony. And so likewise, wisdom, who has been with God since before the foundation of the world, also goes out to those who need her. Because those who would have her, right? Those, as Jesus says, those who have, more will be given, right? And that's why a simple word goes deeper into a wise man. A wise man is able to grow more from that than a fool would gain from a thousand stripes, a thousand lashings on the back. And what is she saying to them? Why is she reaching out to the simple, and to the scorner, and to the fool? Well, she's saying the same thing Jesus said, right? Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Turn you at my reproof. Turn, hear. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you, and make known my words unto you. That does sound very familiar, doesn't it? There was promises all through the Old Testament of the pouring out of the Spirit of God. And he said, time and again, that he would, if you asked for more wisdom, he would give it to you. Turn at my reproof. And so, as we go back to that verse 22, it says, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? We should not assume. We should not go by these kinds of passages and just think of the people who we know who fit the description of being simple. Right? And the scorners delight in their scorning. That is an especially hard one, especially in an age of Twitter, right? Where scorning can be done behind a mask and you never have to look someone in the eye and you can just kind of let that out there. But how easy is it for us to be scornful of other people? The wisdom is saying that to scorn is to be simple. It is to be a fool. It is to be in this class of people that are outside of true wisdom, outside of true understanding of how the world itself works. And this holds back a great many promises, like we looked at before, that you would be able to gain subtlety to the simple, that you would have set before you understanding, that you would have set before you wealth and growth in every manner. And then, of course, to be a fool is to hate knowledge, right? How long do you fools continue to hate knowledge? And again, we don't want to just pass this over without giving it a second thought, because it's been preserved for us by God all the way until now with reason. And it doesn't necessarily mean that every person who reads it is a fool, but it does mean every person who reads it should question it. It shouldn't just run over this like another passage of Scripture. And then it says, turn me at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you, and I will make known my words unto you. That's almost verbatim what's said in Joel, and then what later was quoted by Peter when the Holy Ghost came and was given to the sons of men. But why? Why would this not be something we would want? Well, it's terribly simple, isn't it? That we love simplicity. That we delight in scorning. And that we hate knowledge. But why? Well, simplicity is simple, right? It doesn't hurt as much as growth does. It doesn't hurt as much as knowledge does. There's a reason why they call it growing pains. And to delight in scorning, because scorning is pleasing. It is. If you've ever been scornful, if you've ever been in the in crowd looking at the out crowd, taking the opportunity to be insulting, or just looking at someone who knows less than you, even whether it be just a sinner who doesn't understand the simple goodness of Jesus, or someone who refused to continue some form of education for school, or someone who refuses to work as hard as they should, just anybody who is outside of your place of strength, it is pleasing. It is delightful, whether we acknowledge it or not, to scorn someone. As a form of pleasure, however, that is unsustainable. It's unsustainable. The pleasure that comes from God and that comes from wisdom is not just sustainable, it is eternal. And that is to say, it is sustainable through an unending life, meaning it doesn't get boring, it continues to grow. And so there is this dichotomy that we have to pursue, but then also, fools who hate knowledge. Like I said about growing pains, knowledge is scary. It's very scary, because as you grow, especially when we're younger, we find all these different new things, it's easy to begin to learn something. It's hard to have that learning shape into truth. Right? As we begin to understand the gospel, we can take in all different ideas and concepts from all of the different religions of the world around us, but then it hurts to have that sharpened back off. Knowledge hurts. It's painful. It's a painful growing process. But it is also very good for us. But to seek just to be safe, to seek just to be simple, to seek just to be unchallenged and happy, to seek, you might call that a form of retirement, right? It is dangerous. So turn. Turn from that reproof. And why? Why should we? Well, because wisdom only cries for so long, right? Just as God only cries for so long. We know, at least in the final form, that death eventually comes to us all. That it's given to all men to die and be judged. That there is a time frame while we are here below. But also, because while we live, there are time frames. If you look through the scripture, there are times when God just says, it will go this far and no farther. We've seen that in judgment of nations, of families, of individuals. It happens time and again. And this also is true of wisdom. Because I have called and you refused. I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. But you have set at naught all my counsel and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. Now that is a scary thing. The very wisdom of existence itself, to laugh at your calamity. Wisdom, that thing upon which all things are built. That thing that is proper building, right? To laugh at the eventual fall of those who would ignore her, who would not listen to her still small voice in the streets as she's built up. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh with desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you. It's easy to read this just as poetry and consider just for a moment, but she repeats the phrase, when your fear comes. That's a scary thing, right? By definition, it's a scary thing. Those things, like Job said, that which I feared has come upon me. You imagine Job rose early every morning because he was dreadfully afraid that his children would all die, and maybe worse yet, die in sin. Right? And they died in the middle of a birthday party celebration. So can you imagine how that might have reflected upon that good man's conscience? And what he was exactly fearing might happen. He lost everything. It sure looked like a judgment. The hand of God was on him. All of his servants who, him being a just man, you imagine, he loved them as well. So likewise, those things that you fear, they have a natural place. And she says that to ignore her is to call down a very painful form of judgment. That your fear will come, and she will mock, and she will laugh, and then as your destruction comes, as a whirlwind. Think of like a tornado just blowing through your life and tearing apart and dismantling everything about you. That is the judgment that comes from ignoring the wisdom that God put before you in the earth. When distress and anguish come upon you, oof. I wouldn't want either one of those in my house, stress or anguish, right? But when they come, not if, when they come, Then shall they call upon me, and I will not answer. She says there's a time when you can call upon me and she will answer. There's a time when you can study wisdom and it can seep into your bones and change the person there and make you into someone who can do it. But the thing about wisdom is that she says very clearly, then they shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. He says to seek her while you are young. Seek her while the trouble and calamity is not at your door. It makes you think of like a fighter, right? If you've ever gotten into a fight, you know that at that moment, you do not train to fight. At that moment, you are in it until the end. Whatever training you have, that's all you have. Whatever strength you have, that's all you have. You're not going to have some kind of a miraculous deliverance of Taekwondo training come into your mind and body. It's just not going to happen, right? And so likewise, wisdom is to be found now, while she calls you, while she cries out from all around you. But when the moment comes, and when the day of darkness hits, and the day of evil, as the scriptures talk about it, that day it's too late. That day, what you have at your disposal is all you have. So seek her. It says, for that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. It's interesting how those two go together, isn't it? Right? To hate knowledge and to not choose the fear of the Lord. Those two things are both separate because you had to say both, but they're also intertwined. Right? Because true knowledge is to truly understand how powerful the Creator of everything is. That He is a Creator, He is uncreated. That He is a being, but He is all-powerful, all-knowing. It's easy to put that in simple platitudes, right? But He's also got a very gentle touch. Have you ever wondered why, the more we understand science, I am often nipped by how that our hands don't just fall apart. That in the worst case scenarios when our pain sensors have all kinds of problems, as we've even seen happen recently here in the church, that it doesn't happen more regularly. That parts of your body don't just suddenly disappear and become uncreated. The entire thing is woven together so perfectly, so holy, so well, that His wisdom and the beauty of His wisdom is shown before us everywhere we look. And to fully understand the power of being to be able to make that, to put it together, to hold it together, and to continue it without it being destroyed and to have it collapse in on itself, which as we see the elements, we see that they're basically held together and expanded by strings. Right? And that the whole thing could just completely collapse back in. It's why people who are godless, they have another thing to fear, right? It's just the simple end of everything. You can see enough movies that come out about that. It screams behind their ears all the time that we don't understand how this thing continues to go, so it's just going to fall apart, and that's just going to be the end, right? You see this perpetual obsession with the end of the world. And that's with good reason, because it doesn't make sense unless you have a very powerful, very wise, and very understanding being holding the whole thing together and continuing to move it, who designed it, who maintains it, and continues to control it. To not fear Him is to not have any taste of knowledge, not have any interest in knowledge. But it continues, they would none of my counsel, and they despise all of my reproof. Again, I just would submit that it's because it's uncomfortable. And if you don't whet your appetite, if you don't begin to see all the promises that are here, to grow in wisdom hurts. To grow at all hurts, right? Again, they call it growing pains with good reason. So it's better to sit in simplicity to some, right? I think that they say about children with messy diapers, right, that they'd rather just stay where they are because it's warm and it's mine. Right? Rather than do anything about it. And so just like that, that's kind of like how we end up in our lives. Rather than seeking out new wisdom, we'd rather be satisfied with what we know and understand. Therefore, there shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. Now, if someone just said that, like, oh, you're going to get to enjoy the fruit of your own choices and you're going to get to be filled with your own devices, with your own inventions. At first glance, you might think that's a bit of a compliment. But this is a saying of doom, of woe, of pain and torment and trouble, right? Saying that when this happens, you won't have wisdom at your disposal. That is a frightful thing because we haven't really considered the end thereof, the end of these things being death. We haven't really seen the end of our way. And I suppose that's why it says in the scriptures that with days is wisdom. And as we see people of all different ages in this group, that the more of you who have seen more days have gotten to see more people's ends, the ends of different ways that appeared and started out one way, but end in places that are completely different, sometimes for the better, but sadly so often for the worst. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. And that's something that God shows in the Old Testament again and again, is how he judges the people, which is not to just rain down fire. No, that's much farther down the line. They have to earn that, right? But how do they earn that? Well, it says, he says, he gave them to their own devices. He gave them to their own sins. He gave them to their own way. That is the most ominous thing the Bible can possibly say, because if God is just and God cannot change, that means that when he judges sin, it's the same every time. It's the same reaction every time. And so when the people that the Israelites were going to eventually go in and replace, he said the Israelites had to wait for a little while. Why? He said because the iniquity has not yet been filled, because he is a righteous judge. But he had already given them over to their sins, right? So you might say, but they're not yet judged by God. No, no, no. God doesn't change, which means if he already did step one, gave them to their sins, step two is guaranteed to happen. He might as well have already had this invading army come in and destroy them the moment he said to them, go ahead, go your own way, be filled with your own devices. And so likewise, to hear wisdom, this to work hand in hand with God to create everything that you walk on, everything that you are, and everything that you breathe, to say the same thing, is, I think, just as frightful from our tiny little place in existence. But, and it's a very big moment to stop for, but whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely. And I think I reiterated this just last week, that we call ourselves sometimes, and depending on where you go, hard shall Baptist, because we believe he shall save his people from their sins. And I think this is another shall that we can trust in, because it comes from the same God. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Later it says, the integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. That's just one proverb left before you. I would just urge you to lean in, to watch for wisdom, and to seek it while she is yet to be found, rather than waiting for that dark and evil day. Thank you.